Good Thursday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Glad to have you along here today. We'll bring you feature agricultural news reports along with a look at regional and national agricultural news. And we'll start with regional agricultural news headlines right after this.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service, in the latest California Crop Progress and Condition Report, average lows for California ranged from 15 to 44 degrees in the mountains last month, 23 to 64 in the desert, 31 to 55 along the coast, and 32 to 56 in the Central Valley. Average highs for the state range from 26 to 72 in the mountains, 47 to 82 along the coast, 50 to 93 in the desert, and 53 to 79 in the Central Valley. From the California Department of Water Resources, snowpack water content in the Northern Sierra was 57.50 inches compared to 4.10 inches this date last year. Central Sierra was 62.50 inches compared to 70.90 inches this date last year. Southern Sierra was 61.50 inches compared to 6.30 inches this date last year. California DWR CIMIS stations recorded 1,715 chill hours at Gerber, 1,553 chill hours at Williams, 1,547 chill hours at Holt, 1,742 chill hours at Merced, 1,501 chill hours at Fresno, and 1,388 chill hours at Arvin. Early stone fruit varieties were leafing out while later varieties continued to bloom. Grape buds continued to open and some were leafing out. Navel oranges and mandarins were being picked and packed. Some olive trees were being trimmed while other mature trees were being dug for ornamental use. Cherry bloom was complete as of the end of last week. Blueberries and blackberries were blooming. Ongoing rain and more recent hail have hindered the typical strawberry harvest time. Almond growers applied herbicides and pesticides during the break from the rain and were preparing to apply fertilizers. Fungicides were applied in some areas where the rain has caused standing water to collect near tree roots. Many almond orchards have completed bee pollination. However, the surplus of rain early in the season had a negative impact on the pollination process, which could lead to limited yields. Pistachios may begin to bloom soon as temperatures rise. Catkins were beginning to show on early variety walnuts. In the vegetable crops in the Sacramento Valley, wet weather delayed the transplant of tomato crops. Planting will begin as soon as fields are ready. Asparagus was harvested in the Capay Valley. Broccoli and garlic continue to grow well in Stanislaus County. Some Tulare County farmers reported falling behind in planting of summer vegetables. Squash, cucumbers, and tomato transplants await drier field conditions before being planted. Over 5 million Californians rely on CalFresh benefits. During the COVID pandemic, many families were automatically bumped up to receive the maximum benefit amount. For many people, that was at least an extra $95 a month. The program ended on March 26th, but despite the COVID assistance program ending, many families still rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And with high inflation, experts argue that extra financial assistance is still very necessary. In order to alleviate some of that need, the state recently launched a pilot program to make fresh fruit and vegetables more accessible and affordable for those receiving assistance. The California Fruit and Vegetable EBT pilot program will reimburse CalFresh recipients for purchasing produce grown within the state. Taylor Farms, a North American producer of salads and healthy fresh foods, will reopen its food service facility on Abbott Street in Salinas, California, following a devastating fire that occurred in April of 2022. The facility is scheduled to be in full operation by the end of this month. Bruce Taylor, chairman and CEO of the company, says they are thrilled to be back in this facility and once again serve their customers from this flagship location. The site is particularly meaningful to the family-owned company because it's where the business began in California nearly 30 years ago and is a foundation that provided the momentum for the rest of the country. Across North America, Taylor Farms has 22 production locations, 24,000 team members, and produces and delivers healthy, fresh foods on a daily basis. Taylor Farms is excited to be back up and running for the start of the Salinas season in this new state-of-the-art facility. Consumers are beginning to understand how versatile and healthy walnuts can be. This has led to walnut imports increasing by 75% during the last decade, and imported walnuts from California growing fivefold over the same time. Over 99% of walnuts grown in the United States are sourced from the fertile fields of California's Central Valley. Pam Graviat, Senior Marketing Director International at California Walnuts, told Grocery Trader what opportunities there are to increase walnut consumption. She says over the past 10 years, walnut imports have increased as more consumers turn to walnuts as a healthy addition to their everyday diet. Over that time, imported walnuts from California have grown fivefold, demonstrating that UK consumers have an affinity for the deliciously mild flavor and creamy texture that California delivers. While walnuts are familiar to UK consumers, annual per capita consumption is still very low at 0.107 kilograms, so she says there is tremendous opportunity for growth. Last crop season, the UK was the fifth largest importer of walnuts in Europe, and the demand for healthy, nutritious food is increasing. Walnuts can play a role in offering a nutrient-dense, flavorful addition to the daily diet, which aligns with consumers' desire to eat not only nutritious foods, but ones that also offer functional health benefits. Most notably, walnuts are a heart-healthy food recognized by Heart UK and the American Heart Association with a qualified health claim in the EU. Consumers, chefs, and food manufacturers are just now realizing how versatile walnuts can be, as they have a soft, meaty texture that easily absorbs the flavors of other ingredients. California walnuts, like almost everything else, has felt the challenges of ongoing supply chain disruptions. However, things are slowly improving. California's walnut industry handlers are working diligently to meet the needs of the growing demand in the UK. Climate-related events in California have been in the news over the past 2 years, and this growing season was no exception. In early September, just as a critical final stage of walnut development, and at the start of California's harvest season, the state experienced an excessive heat wave that lasted a number of days, damaging part of California's walnut crop. Even though Mother Nature wasn't kind, the majority of the crop is still the delicious flavor and delightful crunch that California is known for, with walnuts available for shipment year-round. For over 50 years, California walnut growers and processors have supported research and innovation in water quality and usage, water conservation, soil usage and replenishment, energy use, and air quality. The California walnut industry is always looking for new methods to grow and process walnuts that minimize waste, enhance productivity, and preserve natural resources, according to Graviat. Walnuts have been grown commercially in California since 1867, and the industry is mostly multi-generational family farms who are stewards of these managed forests that produce walnuts, a nutrient-dense food that improves human health. As for the 2023 crop, it's too early to tell as the trees are still dormant. Graviat says they have experienced a great deal of rain this winter and have a wonderful snowpack in a Sierra Nevada mountain range to the east that provides California's Central Valley with much of its fresh water. More than 99% of walnuts grown in the United States are grown in California's Central Valley. Cal OSHA has formally proposed an indoor heat illness regulation for heat illness prevention in indoor places of employment. This new regulation would affect all indoor work areas where the temperature equals or exceeds 82 degrees Fahrenheit when employees are present. In these areas, the employer must provide a mandatory cool-down area that is less than 82 degrees. In addition, the employer must monitor the temperature and heat index at all times. Employers will also have to develop and implement emergency response procedures, employee training, supervisor training, and have a written heat illness prevention plan. The proposed standard is set to be heard by the Standards Board in May. The Western Agricultural Processors Association is opposed to the standard as currently written.
The EPA has proposed new changes to rodenticide labels in an effort to protect human health, the environment, and federally listed endangered and threatened species. Rodents can cause many issues within the agriculture industry, so the adjustments could have large impacts on some producers. Roger Baldwin, Cooperative Extension Specialist at UC Davis in the Department of Wildlife, Fish, and Conservation Biology, tells us more about the problems rodents can cause, the proposed changes, and potential impacts.
So rodents, in particular burrowing rodents, cause lots of problems in production ag settings. In croplands. You get a variety of different species like ground squirrels, pocket gophers, voles, sometimes rats and mice, which can damage the crops directly by feeding on the crop. If we're talking about orchards or vineyards, they might girdle the plants, which can lead to mortality of branches or the entire tree or vine itself. If we're talking about some of the below ground rodents, they can damage root systems, which can lead to mortality of the plants, potentially could lead to increased disease in plants by exposing them more to certain kinds of diseases. They pose, the burrow systems can pose hazards to farm workers, farm laborers. They can damage irrigation systems, particularly chewing on irrigation lines. We see increased soil erosion from burrow systems where water will channel down through those burrow systems, leading to substantial erosion issues. We can see crop loss down through burrow systems, in this case talking about mostly nut orchards, where when they shake the trees, there's lots of ground squirrel burrow systems that can lose nuts down through those burrow systems. And there's potential for food safety concerns from fecal contamination of rodents in these settings as well. And then you also have rodent issues in barn storage facilities, processing plants, things like that, where they can chew on electrical cables and wires, which can lead to issues. There's definitely food contamination concerns in these particular areas. So yeah, a variety of different potential problems that these rodents can cause. And as far as rodenticides, you know, they're one of the primary tools that we've used for managing rodents over the last number of decades. They're generally pretty efficacious and relatively cost-effective compared to some of the other tools. In some settings, there's actually very few alternatives to rodenticides for managing rodents. In other cases, there are a variety of other tools out there that can be used. And so it's fairly species-specific and somewhat crop-specific as far as you know, what kind of alternatives we have to rodenticides and how effective some of those alternatives to rodenticides can be.
Rodenticides are an important part of effective rodent management. Baldwin highlights some of the proposed changes and how they may change the rodent management landscape.
So I guess I would start off by saying that you know, some of these proposed changes have come about because of potential concerns of non-target exposure to these rodenticides, which can occur in a couple of different ways. One of them would be direct consumption of the rodenticide by a non-target species. And then the other option or the other route is through consumption of dead or dying rodents that have fed on these rodenticides. And so certainly, you know, I think most of us agree that the ultimate goal should be to try to reduce that kind of non-target consumption. And that's what some of these proposed changes have been targeted for. However, these targeted changes are likely to have a substantial impact on how ag producers could potentially manage rodent species moving forward. Some of these proposed changes include making all rodenticides essentially restricted use products for use in ag settings. For California producers, that's probably not a huge change because they've mostly been restricted use products in the state of California for a while now, and some other states that would be a substantial change there. Other proposed changes include changes in how the products would be applied. For example, in rangeland settings, in pasture settings, currently you are allowed to utilize above ground applications via broadcast or spot treatment. These proposed changes would eliminate the use of broadcast applications and spot treatments for first generation anticoagulants, which are a type of rodenticide. Some of the active ingredients are difastinone and chlorfastinone. So this is a commonly used strategy and sometimes considered one of the only effective strategies over larger areas for managing species such as ground squirrels or maybe voles. So that's a fairly substantial change. For Paca gopher control, the proposed changes would also eliminate the use of first-generation anticoagulants within crops during the growing season. So if we're talking about orchards or vines, for example, or alfalfa, you wouldn't be able to utilize those products for gopher control during the growing season. And for certain crops, like citrus, pretty much growing year-round, an evergreen tree, that would eliminate its use year-round in those settings. Another potential change is the mandatory carcass search requirement, where the new labels would require the applicator to search for carcasses every 2 days, starting 4 days after the initial application, and extend for at least 2 weeks after the final application. So that's a very substantial change, because it would require a lot more labor to go back out there and check the entire area for carcasses a number of times, you know, minimum of probably 5 or 6 times, in a lot of cases, 7, 8, 9 times or more, if that particular change goes through. And then there's some changes in the label with respect to safety equipment. Different kinds of respirators would be required, pretty substantial respirators would be required to use when applying these products, and then chemical resistant gloves, which are not known to be very dexterous. So that could be a potential challenge as well for applicators. And then the final one that comes to mind are some changes as far as what can be used, when and where, how it's applied, et cetera, within endangered species ranges. And these limitations have always been present on these rodenticides, but what this new language is doing is substantially broadening the areas where those changes would apply to, and ultimately could result in the loss of the ability to utilize rodenticides in many, if not most, applications throughout much of the state. So in some ways, some folks consider this to be the biggest change, but some of that is yet to be written. So we're not yet really sure to what extent that's going to apply.
The impact of these changes could depend somewhat on the species that is causing problems, as well as the producer's cropping system.
So there are certain scenarios, let's say pocket gophers, for example. There are other rodenticides that are not going to be eliminated for use against pocket gopher control during the growing season, such as zinc phosphide and strychnine. So that's an alternative for pocket gophers. In addition, there are burrow fumigants, which are very effective, that can be used against gophers, and trapping is very effective for gopher control. So maybe for gophers, these proposed changes have less impact. For voles, I think I would argue that that's the other end of the spectrum. Vole control, particularly in certain crops such as alfalfa, are highly reliant upon rodenticides for effective management. Trapping is simply not practical. They're way too numerous for trapping to be an option. Burrow fumigants do not work well for voles, and alternative rodenticides are simply not out there. So the loss of a broadcast application of zinc phosphide in an alfalfa field basically means you're losing just about the only tool that is practical for vole management in alfalfa. So in those scenarios, you're left with very few options, one of which is flood irrigation. But of course, there's limitations on, you know, where flood irrigation can be used, right? So you're definitely going to see a substantial reduction in options in some cases.
The public comment period for these proposed changes ended in February. While the exact timeline for approval and implementation of these changes is not known, Baldwin said the EPA is planning to move through the process fairly rapidly, with some decisions being made within the next year. This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The National Association of Conservation Districts recently hosted their annual fly-in to Washington, D.C. Second Vice President Bill Simshauser says that the officer team, members, and staff took part in the event, where he says they focused on the Inflation Reduction Act money and conservation programs during their discussion with the Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby.
It's going to be hard to get that money to conservation practices and get it on the ground, and simply because of lack of staff with the NRCS. And so we a lot of talk about the staffing and technical assistance there.
Simshauser said they also met with the Farm Service Agency and talked specifically about the Conservation Reserve Program.
We would like to have the rental rate structure basically reversed so that the most erodible, the most sensitive lands has the highest rental rate, and the best farm ground, the most productive land, has the lowest rental rate. And the idea is there, we want to be able to keep our most sensitive lands in the CRP, and we still need to, you know, farm and have production on our best farm ground.
Additionally, Simshauser said they met with the Environmental Protection Agency and got a Waters of the U.S. rule update, and also met with the Department of Natural Resources and Environment to get an update on forest management and fire mitigation. The U.S. Department of Agriculture recently announced details around its $75 million investment in conservation assistance for producers transitioning to organic production. As part of the multi-agency organic transition initiative, USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service will dedicate financial and technical assistance to a new organic management standard and partner with new organic technical experts to increase staff capacity and expertise. The investment, which includes funds from the 2020 Coronavirus Aid Relief and the Economic Security Act, will help to build new and better markets and income streams, strengthen local and regional food systems, and increase affordable food supply for more Americans while promoting climate-smart agriculture and ensuring equity for all producers. NRCS will dedicate $70 million to assist producers with a new organic management standard under the Environmental Quality Incentives Program. NRCS will help producers adopt the new organic management standard, which allows flexibility for producers to get the assistance and education they need, such as attending workshops or requesting help from experts or mentors. It supports conservation practices required for organic certification and may provide foregone income reimbursement for dips in production during a transition period. NRCS will announce state-specific deadlines later this year, after which producers can apply through NRCS at their local USDA service center. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations Food Price Index averaged 126.9 points in March. That was down 2.8 points or 2.1% for February. The average marks the 12th consecutive month decline since reaching its peak 1 year ago. During the past 12 months since March of 2022, the index has declined 20.5%. The Cereal Price Index averaged 138.6 points in March, down 5.6% from February and 18% below its 1 year ago level. The Vegetable Oil Price Index averaged 131.8 points in March, down 3% from February and 47.7% below its level a year ago. The Dairy Price Index averaged 130.3 points in March, down 1.1 points from February and 10.7% lower for the year. The Coalition to Promote U.S. Agricultural Exports urges congressional appropriators to continue mandatory funding for market access and foreign market development programs. The coalition also asked the Senate Agriculture Committee to include a provision that would double the dollars for those programs in the next farm bill. The coalition says the agricultural outlook for trade is uncertain due to continuing supply chain disruptions, surging international competition, and the absence of new near-term trade agreements. The group includes more than 120 agricultural organizations. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey with a look at the pace of cotton planting.
If you look at the national number for cotton planted, 6% of the intended acreage planted by April 9th 1 point behind the five-year average of 7%, a point behind last year's 7%. We see progress only in three of the 15 reporting states. Arizona leads 13% of the cotton planted. That's less than half the average pace of 27%. Texas is pretty much on par at 11% planted, five-year average 12%. But in California, and it's an interesting situation there because some of the acreage for cotton is being flooded as we speak, as Lake Tulare has reappeared in the San Joaquin Valley. That's going to cost producers some acreage. Whatever the case, the impacts of flooding and some of the cool, wet weather, 0% planted in California, five-year average is 10%. And I did want to briefly mention that we do have 1% planted in Louisiana, so outside of California, I'm sorry, outside of Arizona and Texas. That's the only other acreage that has been planted.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.